It's time for ESPN Las Vegas legal insider Justin Watkins with Battleborn Injury Lawyers, only on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
All right, here we go, 4 o'clock hour. Brought to you by Battleborn Injury Lawyers, Adam Hill, Steve Cofield. Justin Watkins is in his studio, the Battleborn Broadcast Center. Damon is back in our Finley Toyota studio. So much to get into. We're fired up to check out the WNBA draft tonight. We should all be fired up for the stretch run here. Last couple games for VGK. And what might be a playoff run? Which I think is a good question to open with. But first of all, let's talk about the last game, because that's the kind of game that should create some momentum and confidence.
I mean, that's the kind of game that they were doing routinely down the stretch last year and into the playoff, which was they were never out of it. They fought their way back in. It's the opposite of what's been happening for like the last 3 or 4 weeks, which is the third period has gone completely the opposite direction and the other way. They finally made up a 3-goal deficit instead of giving it up, which they've done, I think, 3 times in the last 4 weeks. Gosh, I mean, to me, who really stood out was Hurdle. The way he asserts himself in front of the goal and doesn't get pushed out of there is something that I don't think we've really had, not to that caliber anyway. So I'm excited to see how he continues to develop and get some chemistry with his line mates around him. And I think, you know, I think if Mark Stone gets healthy within those first couple games and finds his stride, going to be a tough out.
Well, were you happy that they came back and won yesterday?
I bet them money line when they were down 2-0. I wish I would have waited for 3-0.
I guess I'm saying bigger picture. Yeah. Were you happy?
No, I think I am. I think in the order of potential opponents, I think I want Vancouver first, and then Dallas and Edmonton are
a toss-up. At this point, it's Edmonton or Dallas.
No, it could be Vancouver. It could be Vancouver.
It's real tough.
No, it could be. It could be. There's 2 scenarios. One, if Nashville were to lose out and then we were to win out, sure, we could take over that first wild card spot.
So yeah, I thought I saw the percentage today of Vancouver is like 3% or something.
Yeah, because Nashville's got an easy, easy stretch run here.
And Edmonton would have to win every game and Vancouver would have to lose every game in regulation, I believe.
No, that can't be. That can't be. But in any case, the reason why it's so impractical is because then we also have to pass LA and Edmonton has to pass Vancouver.
Yeah, Edmonton is down 5 points with 3 games to play.
But they got 2 in hand, right?
Yeah, one in hand.
Oh, okay.
So they have 3 games to play. They can get to 108.
Oh, that's right, because
Vancouver
lost.
Has two games left and they're at 107.
Yep, that's right.
It'd be real tough to get.
They dropped that last game. Yeah, so that's right.
Essentially, I yesterday if they would have lost, they almost certainly would have been playing Dallas.
Right.
To me, I thought that was maybe that might be their most ideal scenario.
I think it's pretty close.
Vancouver
would have been the one you want. But Dallas has played tough all season long. They're a pretty deep team too. And Edmonton has not been playing well for the past 2 weeks.
Well, Connor's been hurt and now he's coming back tonight.
Yeah, but he's only missed 3 games. Yeah. They were 3-6-1 the prior 10 to that. So they have not been playing well. I still don't believe Stuart Skinner is a good goalie, and I think Ottinger's a good goalie.
Sure.
So, you know, and if you are playing Dallas, you got to look at the next round is in the Central. So you're either doing Winnipeg or Colorado, both of whom are better than the difference between, say, L.A. and Vancouver.
Well, some people are just trying to focus on locking in travel plans, Justin.
Yeah, I mean,
just want to have the opponent determined.
Ideally, if we had to play Edmonton, I want to play them in the second round because I don't think that they are built for long stretches into the playoffs because they're way too top heavy. Their top guys play tons of minutes and they wear down. And if there's any injuries, it's just catastrophic to them as compared to other teams. Whereas I think Dallas is sort of more built for longer playoff runs. So, My thought was I would have ideally taken Edmonton in the second round, but I think it's a toss up between Edmonton and Dallas as to who's a better matchup for us round one.
So do you? I actually asked the I asked Bruce Cassidy yesterday if he thinks that is the kind of game that you can draw back on. If it's, you know, second round of the playoffs, game three, you're down 3-0 after the second intermission. Can you tell the team, hey, remember you did this? And he kind of said, yes, all those things are things you can take of. Is that the kind of game you think that they can use to build off of in the playoffs?
I don't think they needed that game to have that belief system in their ability to come back. I mean, they're the defending Stanley Cup champs.
They haven't really had one like that, though.
You know, they have in the last 2 years. I mean, the team is largely the same, absent the trade deadline acquisitions this year. There's enough leadership on that team that has played in enough games like that together with VGK on a stretch run when it was important. I mean, remember last year, Edmonton was chasing us down to take over the division, to win the division. And I think they went like 9-1 the final 10. And we, every game was important to hold on to that number one seed. And I think we went either 8-1-1 or 8-2. So we had, there was some pressure played games going in, and several of those types of games where we came back in the third period. And now what I want to see them do, and I still haven't seen them do, is hold on to a one goal lead for the entire 20 minutes of the third period. And, you know, play that stout defense and have some timely goalie play, because I'm concerned about our goalies right now.
Who's starting game one?
I mean,
if you're the coach.
I'll tell you who Bruce Cassidy's going to start game one. Aiden Hill. I mean, he clearly thinks that Aiden Hill is the better goalie for his system, and he's probably right. But, I mean, he's given up somewhere between 3 and 5 goals every time he gets out there. I mean, at some point, the results are better for Thompson than they are for Hill. And I have to believe that comes into consideration.
You got to find that magic again.
He might.
That's the team magic. You got to find it.
Well, I think having Petrangelo in there with a full defensive lineup will be helpful. I think if Stone's in there, you know, we have one of our best defensive forwards back in the lineup. And then you start talking about all four lines being excellent defensively. And let's face it, games are played a little bit differently in the playoffs. You know, people are more willing to sacrifice their body for block shots and do what's necessary than they are for 82 games straight.
And teams are willing to have as much money in the lineup as they want to.
Yep. I freaking love it, dude. I mean, if the rule allows for it, it's not like they went out there and said, hey, Mark Stone, go rupture your spleen. You know, now the timing of it is fortunate, but okay, you take it.
But it's back-to-back years, which makes it interesting. But I guess my counter would be, if this is an opening in these rules, why aren't more teams doing it?
Yeah.
And because they don't want to pay for it.
They don't want to pay.
That's right.
They don't want to spend money.
That's right.
And maybe NHL, I might buy it with a handful of franchises, but not the whole league.
Well, Tampa's done it.
Right.
You know.
Why aren't other major – it doesn't have to be a major market.
Yeah.
Do you want to win or not? If there's a loophole here, use it.
There's an old guard of ownership in the hockey world that was there for the lean times. You know, now we're getting the Coyotes allegedly are going to be purchased to go to Salt Lake for $1.3 billion. I mean, these owners bought some of these teams for less than $100 million. You know, 25, right. 50 million. And so the idea of what the payroll is and then going beyond the payroll and paying coaches and paying everybody, you know, and they're small markets. Winnipeg's not a big place. You know, Edmonton's not a big place.
Will Winnipeg and Edmonton eventually be sold north of $1
billion? $1
billion? Yeah.
I don't know.
$1 million?
but in the case of Arizona, why it was Arizona Lake especially highly valued money wise?
You're paying the premium.
You're
paying, hey, we want a team right now.
Okay.
That guy has been very aggressive about trying to get sports there. And he's like, all right, how much is it going to cost? All right, we'll do it right now. Let's go.
Interesting. Let's build on this for a second. So I hadn't thought of the premium and the $1.3 billion. The way I looked at it is, why are they sneaking this news out there? And it kind of leaked, but how is this a news dump when almost no one is paying attention that a franchise is moving? Are they embarrassed by it?
I definitely don't think they're embarrassed by it. I mean, I think the league has bent over backwards to try to keep that franchise in Arizona.
Why not make a big deal out of it on a Monday?
Well, I don't think
on a press conference.
I don't think it was intentional that it came out on a Friday. I don't think that's what they wanted to do. But,
yeah, it was,
but
they tried to tell their players, and they didn't want it out. So they said, hey, look, you're going to hear some news in the next couple of days. Yeah. You're going to move into Salt Lake City. You got to prepare your families, get them ready. And then immediately somebody went to their agent, who went to a national reporter, who then put it out late night on what, Thursday night, I think it was, that this meeting had happened. So they were just
they were trying to do the right
thing. To their credit, they were trying to do the right thing. And
they were going to take them to the facilities and everything too. And then it just all blew up. So they had to like call it all off. They were going to go show them the facilities, go show them around town, try to keep it within the team. It's somebody immediately.
They're going to have to do some work in that arena though. It's very dark. Players have talked about that when they play preseason games. Nice players were talking about that the other day. It's an incredibly dark arena.
It's not configured for hockey. It's a smaller rink, right? Don't they have to shrink down the rink when they're there?
I'm not sure on the exact size, but I know the lights were the big thing the Knights were talking about.
Okay. It's still probably triple the size of Mullet Arena.
Give me two other cities that would have been ready to take a hockey team. Look, that Gare approves of, because I hear about, I think it's Quebec City. I hear about Quebec City all the time, and he just kind of brushes it off and is obnoxious to fans asking him questions. So where else could they go?
Kansas City's tried a bunch of times. They already have arena that's ready and built for it. I don't know if he wants to be there, but I know that they have tried in the past. They were putting in, hey, we'll do our own ticket drive when Vegas was doing a ticket drive. So they've tried.
This is good. We have Petro from WHB on later in the hour. And not in the hour, but in the 5 o'clock hour. We'll see what he says. I'm curious on that one. Beyond that, who?
The only other one I can think of off the top of my head is Portland. But just adding Seattle to that region, I don't think Portland geographically is kind of what they want to do. But I'm sure they would have taken the Coyotes on a relocation. But I also don't think that they were aggressive about it. And you know what? Their arena probably needs some work for their NBA team, let alone for the NHL team.
I want Indianapolis to get a team. Just want to go there.
Okay.
Boy. It'll be a good market, right? Salt Lake?
I think so. I actually think that there'll be a lot of fans here. For the Salt, that'll maybe switch allegiances. We have so many people here from Utah, or families from Utah, or still have relatives in Utah. Lots of Jazz fans down here too.
What's
so
the name though?
Not the Coyotes.
No,
it's gonna have to be something different.
Well, they've kept Jazz, even though they don't have Jazz.
That's true. But I think the Coyotes would want to probably hold on to that. If you know, there's a lot of talk in hockey circles about expansion and how far the NHL can actually go in expansion, because yes, they're at 32 like everybody else, but nobody else has six Canadian teams. So there's untapped American markets from what they've seen, and all the sunshine markets have done well, save Arizona has not. If there's a future expansion that's conditioned on a new arena or something like that, could the Arizona Coyotes resurrect? The NHL's got history of that.
Houston.
Yep. Houston.
Sure.
Houston wants one too, apparently.
Atlanta? Not so much.
They had it.
They had it.
A couple times.
So did Houston. You remember when they came out, we were the 100th team, and they gave that list of all teams. Yeah. Houston was on there like twice. Kansas City was on there once. They've had a lot of teams come and go.
I never thought when the Scottsdale mayor came out that might be the death knell. But apparently that was it. Gary Bettman's like, all right, that's it. We're done. It's embarrassing.
It was embarrassing for him to come out.
We don't want it. We don't have the infrastructure. This is the pie in the sky stuff. We have no interest at all. Justin Watkins is here. We're at the Battleborn Broadcast Center. If you need advice, you need help, you got to call Battleborn Injury Lawyers. Call from anywhere in the state of Nevada, 766-1400. Make sure you dial 775 in the north for the Reno office.
It's time for ESPN Las Vegas legal insider Justin Watkins with Battleborn Injury Lawyers, only on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
Yep, Justin is here. It's his studio, Battleborn Broadcast Center. We are getting ready for the WNBA draft. We'll try to send you out for each pick while we're on the air. We're just watching an interview with Angel Reese, and around the table is LaChyna Robinson, Carolyn Peck, and Shanae Agumake. And then Reese came up and was joking with Justin. We're not the tallest. Like, if we were standing in front of that table, my lord.
Yeah.
All women who are 6'3", 6'4".
You'd have to put me on a box.
I'd be in real trouble.
It's like when I shoot commercials with Matt Hoffman. Put me on a box.
Exactly. The height challenge. But we're not heightest on the show. We're represented on every front.
Damon all the way up to, is Adam Hill the tallest person on the show, or is Candy taller?
No,
or?
No chance.
No chance?
No.
Salerno did the show a couple days last week. He's not taller, right?
Is he even 6?
I don't know. I can't tell.
I don't think so.
Was there always an issue with the remember sport, good old Sports Pig, rest in peace, where Pig could have been 5'11" or he could have been 5'6". It was all kind of
was hunched distorted. Over a lot. Yeah,
he was. You're right. He was hunched over. All right. So let's get into a couple of legal issues here in just a second. I have to get your reaction on the entire Oregon State women's team saying, you know, I'm going to test the waters. And then there was a regional announcer who did he go after them in tweets? He kind of just threw out the question, like, have you really thought this through? How about doing something different? And then people came over the top, mostly women, getting mad at him, saying, don't mess with the, you know, people's futures and going to the transfer portal. And then I saw a couple of times people were like, this is unprofessional. I'm like, giving an opinion is not unprofessional, is it?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I mean, obviously, it's odd that you would see the entire team except for one player on an Elite Eight team that, you know, lost to the best, you know, the undefeated team, South Carolina. I mean, it could have been a Final Four team. We're playing very well down the stretch. Them all leave. But it's also a period of uncertainty for Oregon State and Washington State. You know, they don't know where they're going to be. I mean, they know they'll be playing in the West Coast Conference for basketball, which is not terrible for women's basketball. Gonzaga's got a good team. They're always in the tournament. They're always seeded. St. Mary's team isn't too bad either. But it's certainly not the upper echelon like the Pac-12 was this year, right, which had 5 teams in the top 10 at various different points. So, I mean, from my perspective, I certainly understand it. This reporter, is actually more of a play-by-play announcer, right, for the Pac-12 network at times and did some games, but not, he wasn't an Oregon State, play-by-play man. He just jumped out there and fired away some questions. I mean, I thought that they were, I'd say somewhat, instigating in their tone.
Right.
And that's what happened. He got a reaction and most of the reaction was kind of like, hey, you have no idea what's going into these decisions. You don't know what they've talked to their friends and family about or as teammates. And certainly I don't either. So, I mean, I don't fault them. It sucks as an Oregon State alum.
I'll say this. One, it's another example of, and his name is Rich Burke. It's another example of the media giving some of the same scrutiny that male athletes get. That's a good thing. We can have a discussion and then not demand for somebody to be fired or call them unprofessional. And the other thing, going back at Rich, the guy criticizing or saying, hey, you should think this through. If we believe that they're all moving on to potentially Power 4 opportunities, that would also suggest to me that there's a little bit of NIL available for women.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good thing.
That's a great thing. Yeah, no, I agree with you. And, you know, I still hope at the end of the day, you know, that one or two of them stay. We'll see what ultimately happens. But, I mean, I think we've got one of the top 5, if not the top 3 coaches in women's basketball at Oregon State. And he's built it all up again. You know, I mean, it wasn't his first time the Elite Eight. That was his 3rd Elite Eight. He's made it to a Final Four. He's been ranked number 1 at Oregon State was for a time period a couple of years back. So I think ultimately we'll be okay. But it's going to be an interesting 2 years.
It's going to be an interesting 5 years to see, yeah, where all the NIL stuff goes, especially in the conference alignments. Justin Watkins is here, Adam Hill, Steve Cofield. Justin, check that. Adam, what was the latest with Rashi Rice in terms of monies being asked?
So the lawsuit has been filed by the people whose cars were hit in this accident. And it sounds like $1 million in actual damages and 8 to 10 in punitive damages being requested. My immediate thought when I saw this was, all right, they're just setting up whatever the settlement is going to be. Would that be your opinion as well here?
Oh, of course. I mean, you're going to put a number that it's – so in some jurisdictions, you have to state an amount. In Nevada, you don't. You just have to say it's over the jurisdictional amount. And the jurisdictional amount here for district court is $15,000. So every lawsuit says in excess of $15,000. In Texas, you have to enumerate your damages at the beginning. And, you know, it doesn't have to be the ultimate landing point of where you get. But you have to state something. And, yeah, that's going to be your starting point. You're going to start there. And, you know, I think I talked about this on air, but if I didn't, you know, sort of the cynic in me says that these will get settled and diminish what happened, or prosecution of some of those higher offenses that have been included in the criminal complaint?
They do have the ability, not the ability to directly drop the charges, but to tell authorities they don't want to pursue anymore. Like once they get a payoff, they can just say, "Ah, we're good." Or is it ultimately a decision of the prosecutors to make that call?
Yeah, it's ultimately the prosecutors, to answer your question. You know, you could subpoena them as witnesses and make them testify, but history, these are experienced prosecutors, and prosecuting a witness who's supposed to be favorable as an adverse witness when they tell you, "I don't want to go, I don't want to participate," does not go well in court because their demeanor is like, "I don't want to be here. It wasn't that big of a deal." You know, you're trying to ask these leading questions and say, you know, and he was going super fast. "I don't know. I wasn't even watching." You know, they undercut your case so severely by forcing them to testify. You rarely see it.
Would you in the settlement though, would Rashi Rice's side be allowed to say, "Hey, you have to be hostile in court"?
No.
Like you still have to tell the truth, right? No.
That'd be an obstruction of justice, right? That's a crime on its own. So you can't say as a part of this settlement, you're going to refuse to testify or that you're going to testify favorably. Now you can, as part of it, get, say, an affidavit of your story to lock them in, right? So now how would that really work? You know, you got some wordsmithing going on across the different sides. Well, this is your story. I'm not making it different, but these words might soften,
sure,
you know, the strength of your, you know, the impact of your testimony, and it continues to be true, but we're going to wordsmith this thing a little bit. And then you get an affidavit as part of the settlement, and now you at least know what's going to be said in criminal court.
There's so many places to go here, but could the court come back and say, "Wait, your affidavit is a lie. We have the video. We saw what happened. What are you talking about in this?"
Yeah, their attorneys are not going to let them sign something that's a lie.
Okay.
Right? But you can absolutely speak from the perspective of perception, not fact, right? I was sitting in this angle from my vantage point. I couldn't tell. Whereas if you're trying to testify favorably for yourself, you might say something like, "I don't know what Speedy was going because I wasn't looking that way, but it was a blur," right? And now you sort of take out that extra little part that doesn't make it any less true, but you're not trying to advocate for your position.
Justin Watkins, Adam Hill, Steve Cofield on this Monday. I want to address this quickly, and then we can have a bigger conversation down the road. Did you guys see the report? Twitter content creator claiming that the Vegas monorail would be shut down. The monorail folks have answered this and said, that's not going to happen. LVCVA, that's not going to happen. What do we think's happening here?
I think eventually the monorail is going to go. If this Vegas loop happens, because if the Vegas loop happens, what's the purpose of the monorail? I mean, we can make the monorail relevant tomorrow. Just connect it to the airport.
Yep.
Right. We could do that. So the fact that they haven't done that.
Why haven't we done that? And why are we now leaning on tunnels and cars that hold four people?
You're preaching to the choir on that one. I mean, if you really want to know why it's not connected to the airports, because when the monorail was built, the taxi lobby was so strong that they didn't want to lose out on all that business. That's the only real substantive business that the taxis got in Vegas, because you could walk up and down the strip. You know, they needed to get the airports. And so that's my opinion. I was way too young to have been in politics at the time, but you know, war stories I hear of how strong the taxi lobby was back then.
Well, who ultimately makes the decisions now
for the monorail?
One or the other.
Yes.
Like they made a decision to invest in.
It's going
to
be
they're ready to go with a station at Virgin and a station over by UNLV. And then that supposedly would be the easy link over to the airport.
Yep.
But
here's the difference though.
Like, are there some sort of deadline? The story I read today in the RJ, it's like, there's no deadline. There's no count. Like, how do you do business like this?
But the thing that's great about, I don't like
I'm
the
talking about on the boring,
right?
It's like, "Oh, maybe Steve Hill's LVCVA." And he's like, "Well, maybe 12 to 18 months on this one." Like, what do you mean? Maybe.
So here's the only thing I could say on the positive side of the Vegas loop is that it the city, both the city and the county, have a revenue share of the Vegas Loop. So as opposed to the monorail needing to constantly be bailed out by millions and millions of dollars from taxpayers through LCVCA, this would ideally, if it's successful, actually be a revenue stream. And from that perspective, I hope it succeeds, man. I really do. I think it's a weird concept, but I really hope it succeeds and we get that revenue stream.
Offices in Reno and Vegas and downtown Vegas and in Henderson. It's Battleborn Injury Lawyers. Call Justin or Matt, the crew here at Battleborn Injury Lawyers. Anywhere in the state, 766-1400, 775 in the north.
It's time for ESPN Las Vegas legal insider Justin Watkins with Battleborn Injury Lawyers, only on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
Yeah, on the subject of the Vegas Loop and the Boring Company and Musk, I think that's something we have to see develop here the next couple of months. We'll see what's going on over at the UNLV station and the Virgin station. And we didn't even mention there was potentially some of the monorail corrupted by, and I don't mean criminally, but part of the structure had been corrupted by some boring drilling, which I think is something really interesting to get into. We'll do that down the road. So we got a story here with Spearman Rhino and Peppermint Hippo. Nothing to do with each other. Doesn't sound like each other, at all. About a lawsuit. So fire away on this. What are they claiming? Rhino versus Hippo?
I mean, Spearman Rhino's claiming that Peppermint Hippo is infringing on their trademark and that they're creating confusion in the public as to an affiliation. This one gets really interesting because, as I was unaware of this, but Adam just made me aware off air, that South Park actually coined the name.
The strip club in South Park is called the Peppermint Hippo.
Okay. So let's start there. South Park allowed to do they owe damages to Spearman Rhino for coming up with the Peppermint Hippo on their cartoon? The answer would be no. Satire. Totally allowed to use. Okay. That's free, fair use under trademark law, especially because they twisted it and made it funny. That's satire. Now, Peppermint Hippo uses it. They potentially have two lines of attack, both from South Park and from Spearman Rhino. South Park saying, hey, dude, you used our idea and our trademark to, and you've stolen that to actually create the embodiment of our episode. And Spearman Rhino saying, that's not satire. That's competition, and you're trying to confuse the public. On both counts, I actually think if this were litigated out, and it'd be an expensive fight, Peppermint Hippo would win because creating the embodiment of a different type of art, so a screenplay or screenwriting of South Park, you don't get protections into all the other areas of the world for having written it down unless you make an attempt to do so. So unless they actually said and throughout an attempt, we're actually going to build this, they don't get to protect the world from that. Spearman Rhino and Peppermint Hippo, I argue, actually makes a clear line of demarcation that they are not affiliated. I mean, I don't think anybody would, you know, I don't think that would be your secondary name or anything like that.
You know what's funny? When it opened, I was like, oh, that's like that must be their, like their other brand.
Sister.
I absolutely thought it was.
Yeah. So how would they go about proving that? They would go out and get opinion polling and show whether or not the public thinks that this is their second location or whatever, however many locations they have, or whether they thought it was competition. And largely, that would be very compelling evidence to the court in making the determination of whether or not the public would be confused by
it. My thought was Rhino was going to open a second location, so they use the South Park like mocking of them as the name of their second location instead of like Spearman Rhino 2. They're like, oh, we'll name it after the South Park. So I absolutely thought that was like kind of their thing.
Yeah, I can see that.
But no, it's not.
No, it's not. So we'll see. I mean, I guarantee you they're gathering public polling right now on the issue to determine how strong their claim is of confusion. Long story short, I don't know how deep the pockets are of the Peppermint Hippo, but it's going to be a very expensive fight if they want to keep that name.
This feels to me, and I could be obviously totally wrong, you tell me, this feels like something that if it is a prolonged legal battle would end up in like a legal textbook somewhere, like a law school court case.
Oh yeah, most trademark infringement cases like this do end up in your patent and trademark law stuff. They're all battled out of the same district court in Texas. That's where all the IP litigation happens. So it's going to be in front of a judge that hears these kinds of cases all the time. We'll have all the factors set out. I studied this in law school. I thought it's what I wanted to do. It's extremely boring stuff.
But we like it.
Yeah, no, it's cool. It's cool to talk about on like a 30,000 foot elevation, yeah. But actually practicing it's mind numbing.
There he is, Justin Watkins. Make sure you call Battleborn Injury Lawyers. You need advice. You have real serious issues. These are the guys in the company, the firm to talk to. 766-1400, dial 775 in the north. Call from anywhere in the state of Nevada, 766-1400.
It's Cofield and Company's Eye on Sports Betting. Only on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
Did you actually try to bet? You were very much guaranteeing that Caitlin Clark was going to number one in the WNBA draft. Were the odds available anywhere? Could you bet, you know, minus 10,000?
I have to imagine there's no way they're available.
Okay. Well, she got picked. She's number one pick in the draft. Her and her good buddy, now I'm blanking on her name. Who's the sports siren up on Twitter there? Who's the reporter again?
Holly Rowe.
Sorry. Old man goes blank. They're doing a lengthy interview, and they expect the Sparks to take Cameron Brink, too. But we'll see. We'll see. And we may go to these live, so we'll kind of mix it in with Matt Jacob, who's up right now. Matt, how you doing, buddy?
Good. How you guys doing?
We're good. You know, watching the WNBA draft, as I've said all last week, women's college basketball is now more popular than men's college basketball. Yeah. And forever forward, but we'll see. I'm excited for ladies to get to the WNBA and increase the audience. But let's talk about one of the other big events of the weekend, and that was the Masters. Mm-hmm. As we've had a little run here of major events where if you play chalk, you won.
Yeah, and if you were able to find Caitlin Clark anywhere, you won that too. So, it's been a wild little run here. UConn and men's basketball tournament, they were the clear-cut favorite going into that tournament and win it all. South Carolina, an even bigger favorite in the women's tournament, and they win it all. And Scheffler, was 5-1, I think, going off at the Masters, which is an extremely short price, given that tournament and the quality of players in that tournament. And he won. You go back to even Adams Wolverines when CFP started, I think Michigan was a slight favorite to win that 4-team event, and they won it. So really the biggest underdog to win a championship recently, believe it or not, is the Kansas City Chiefs in the Super Bowl in terms of entering the event.
Sorry about that. Adam was saying earlier that when he talked to book people, they actually were happy for once that a favorite won, correct, Adam?
Yeah, the number was so low on Scheffler that nobody bet him. And so that was the guy. That was the one guy they won the most on. And I think a lot of people were very happy from the book side that happened. Is that we're going to continue to see going forward just unbelievably low odds on Scheffler and say, hey, if you want to try to beat him, beat him. But we're going to protect ourselves against him.
I think so. I don't see why not. The way he's been playing for 2.5-3 years now, really more than 3 years, believe it or not. I mean, he won the Masters 2 years ago. He's kind of a machine right now. It'd be interesting to see how this new child affects him. From what I understand, he's a deeply religious and family guy. And, you know, I mean, he's going to have help, no question about it. He's, you know, it's not going to be like a normal father situation, but his energy and thoughts will be elsewhere that they previously weren't. So we'll see what that's like on the PGA Championship. But him at 4-1, I mean, if you're the type of bettor who's like, he's a slam dunk, why not take 4-1? I'm 4-1, not 8-1, but it's better than 2-1. Then okay, play it. But it's still a golf tournament with some quality golfers in it. Steve, you sent me the numbers. John Rahm at 14-1. Maybe he just had an off week at Augusta. He could win the PGA Champ. 14-1 on John Rahm? I mean, I'd take that. 20-1 on Brooks Koepka? I'd take that. I wouldn't touch guys like McIlroy, who, you know, just seems to be in a funk, and Spieth and Justin Thomas. But, if you can't get a guy that you – unless you're absolutely certain that, you know, 8-9-1, anything less than that, I don't know how you touch him, even if Scheffler absolutely deserves to be the favorite that he is.
I'll ask Matt first and see if Adam has anything on this one. I had heard early in the tournament that the Tiger-Phil matchup was actually a really big handle. Like, it was the highest bet matchup of the weekend. And, you know, it turned out to be – it wasn't great golf. Phil Mickelson outpaced Tiger, but I'm guessing they probably got another go-around of action if they reset the number going into the weekend. I think it went anywhere from like 140 to minus 170 on the Phil side before the weekend. What did you hear about this, Matt?
I didn't hear anything about it, but it doesn't surprise me at all. Yeah. My finger wasn't on that particular pulse of the tournament, but it wouldn't shock me because of the names of who they are. And, you know, sure, it ended up being like an A's versus White Sox matchup, which you get down to it in terms of the quality of the play. But it's a bet on two guys, and it doesn't matter if they both shoot, you know, 6 under on the day or 10 over on the day. It's still the same wager that you and I, Steve, or you and I, Anna, would make on a golf course. You know, we both suck, but one of us is probably going to finish one stroke better than the other one. So, you know, it's a fun wager. And again, the names are the names, and those guys could be 65 playing on the senior tour, and they might outdraw every other matchup just because they're Tiger and Phil.
I'd bet them on the senior tour. That'd be fun. I don't think I can't see Tiger ever playing the senior tour.
I don't know why he would, unless he just wants to pile up some victories in that thing too. Who knows? But it doesn't serve him any purpose.
We've seen another broadcaster walk away from a particular beat behind the mic, and I saw you gave a little tip of the cap to Vern Lundquist.
Yeah, you know, you wouldn't know it by looking at me or even knowing me, but I'm a softie at heart, and you know, Vern Lundquist, it's just that voice, you know, hearing him at that particular hole at the Masters. And then obviously he gave up his gig with those CBS 1230 games, SEC games a couple years ago. He's, you know, he was always a tune-in guy. This is one of those voices. As a Dodger fan, you know, my whole life, I'm a Vin Scully guy. And so, you know, I get sentimental when it comes to announcers, and it's tough to see him go, but you know, good for him for calling it when he called it, you know, but always better to leave a day early than a day late in that business.
Matt Jacob is with us, our gambling expert on Mondays. All right, we got NBA playing games coming up, and you put up the numbers, you know, looking at, you know, ATS favorites and this and that, and over-under was one that stuck out to me. You know, over the years, I guess these have been, you know, kind of tightly wound teams playing each other, and it hasn't always led to, you know, 135-130 games, right?
No, it hasn't, and it's, you know, again, I preface this in my first tweet I put out today. It's a super small sample size. Don't go actionable on this. But the under thing is interesting. There's been 12 play-in games so far. 10 of them have stayed under the total, including all four of the elimination round games have stayed under the total. So, you know, just something to keep an eye on in terms of, you know, the way these games are lined. I was very interested to see, you know, maybe to this point, the Lakers-Pelicans game has a total of 220. It's come down. I think it's like 224, 224 and a half. And which is interesting because those teams have played a bunch of high scoring games, you know, all season long. Their lowest scoring game was 222. Everything else was like 230 plus, when well beyond. And of course, they played a pretty high scoring game just yesterday in New Orleans. It's going to be the same two teams going at it, you know, within a 48 hour span. So you know, why is that number as short as it is? You know, so maybe there is something to that. And there's also the, you know, whether you win or if you win, you're going to a little bit of a break, but you still dive right into the playoffs. And if you lose, you play again the next day. So, you know, it's hard to, it's almost a must win game in terms of these first two, these Tuesday games. But yeah, I wouldn't be surprised to see the under trend continue. I don't think we'll see 10 and two get to what, 16 and two, but we'll see.
I feel like we need to be especially cautious with the Lakers. What is their goal in this game? And they've been overpriced in the past. Mm-hmm. So what do you think? Because I don't know, let's do a little roundtable here. What do we think the Lakers are trying to accomplish in this first game?
I think they're trying to win and move on. I mean, I understand the theory that, you know, who wants to run up against the Nuggets right now and you'd rather play the Thunder. And the Lakers did win the final three games against Oklahoma City this season, all as an underdog, I believe. But look, the Lakers have – it's all LeBron and it's all AD. AD is constantly hurt. LeBron is older than dirt. Do you want these guys playing any more games than they have to play? And secondly, the Lakers sucked against the Kings this year. They got blown out. And the Warriors, they went 1-7 against those teams. You don't want to run up against either one of those teams in a winner-go-home game. And then also, you're going to have to play the Nuggets eventually. The Nuggets and the Celtics are the only two teams in the NBA playoffs with futures odds less than 14-1. It's amazing. So if you're going to run into the Nuggets, you might as well run into them early, maybe catch them napping, and get them when LeBron and AD are fresh. So I don't see any reason to kind of throw this game or put this game aside to try to position yourself to face a lesser team in Oklahoma City. Just win the game, get a few days off, rest, and move on.
I don't think you can see outright tanking like they did, you know, last week, where they clearly were trying to set up themselves to play against Denver and, not play against Denver. And it didn't work. So now at this point, it is too much of a risk, I think, to try to lose the first game and then try to win the second one just to get the more favorable matchup. You have to get in. But I would say, I think if you see them, you know, third quarter down 14, down 12, I think they shut it down. I think they shut it down for sure. I don't think there's any reason. Yeah, there's any reason to try to push forward, especially because I do think going in, if you ask them their ideal scenario, would be to lose the first and win the second. That's perfect.
But there's just, what's your opinion on my point about if you're going to have to face the Nuggets anyway, you might as well face them early as opposed to late? Well,
who says you're going to have to? Somebody might beat them for you.
Well, who's going to beat the Nuggets in the West? I guess that's my point. Maybe Golden State can. I don't know. When I see those odds, those futures odds, it just screams, you know, how dominant the Nuggets and the Celtics should be in these playoffs.
Matt Jacobs with us. All right, Matt, let's get into a little baseball because I don't know that you can make any official determinations after a couple weeks, but maybe there's some reads off of who's gotten off to good starts, bad starts. You have any thoughts on some of the teams that have gotten off to good starts that, you know, weren't expected to be 90-win teams, we'll say? Pittsburgh, Milwaukee, Cleveland are all moneymakers right now. Anyone in that group where you want to start fading them or you want to jump on? Because I think when teams get off to good starts and they're still lesser teams, I don't think the numbers adjust properly in their direction. So there still could be some value on these teams for weeks.
I agree, too. I agree wholeheartedly, Steve. And there's also there's something to the point of teams starting to believe in themselves after a while, right? These especially when they're young teams like Pittsburgh. You know, we saw it just 2 years ago with Baltimore, and then really again last year with Baltimore. Baltimore's picked to finish last in the AL East, and they win the whole thing, and they finish with the second most wins in baseball. I like Pittsburgh. I liked them coming into the season. I didn't like them to be 11-5 after 16 games, but I think they're a team to keep riding, especially against the right pitchers, or stay away from them against the wrong pitchers, maybe is the better way to put it. And I think Kansas City is a team that has a little Baltimore in them. They had like the second worst record in baseball last year behind the A's, but they made a lot of moves in the offseason. They actually went out and spent some money. They're in a god-awful division. I say that knowing that Cleveland is 11-5 and Detroit's got a winning record too, but I expect that to even out. If you're looking at a team to fade, I think the Brewers are really up there in a lot of offensive categories. I just don't see them sustaining that. I also don't see them, you know, overcoming the pitching losses that they've had, including Burns. I think that's a team that maybe is just playing a little bit above its head and a team to look to fade. I'd say the same thing about Cleveland too, but Cleveland's got the best bullpen in baseball right now. We know how much bullpens mean, especially in this day and age.
All right. Now I'm going to fall on the sword, and I think I'm going to get slaughtered here beyond falling on the sword initially. Matchup, St. Louis and our A's. The A's have actually played pretty decent baseball. When they've lost, they've actually covered a lot of run lines. I know that because I've played against them. Yeah. In tonight's game, they're actually plus 140. Maybe the pitching matchup coming out of the gates is not great. Sonny Gray and Stripling. By the way, that's another thing. Starters don't go a long way at the beginning of the season. So doing your handicap solely on starting pitching is kind of stupid. So my point is, can I bet the A's a little bit, or is this a little false hope?
I mean, I don't believe much in the Cardinals. So in this particular game, I don't see a reason why not to take plus 140. I mean, a week and a half ago, it's probably closer to plus 200, but you take what you get. But look at the pitching. The A's pitching's been, they have the fifth best bullpen ERA right now in baseball, which is amazing. And they've got the same 7-9 record that the Cardinals have. Playing at home, have a little bit of confidence. I don't think that's a terrible bet at all.
Matt, tell people where they can find you, and you've got good news and notes out there. Where can they hunt you down?
Yeah, on Twitter at Matt R. Jacob. Post stuff there pretty regularly, and then my articles appear on oddspediaus.com.
Thank you, Matt. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it. Take care.
There he is, our buddy, Matt Jacob. Example this morning, Cleveland coming out of the gates, making money for people. They were plus 143 in Boston and destroyed them. 6-0.
It was 0-0. I think it was 0-0 in the eighth.
It was. They got six. But
we had a rally, and there was some bad defense for Boston.
You and your long-term Indians player. 5 o'clock, check that. Guardians play. 5 o'clock hours on the way, Cofield and Company, and we'll start going live to the draft, get you updated on what's happening with the WNBA.